on this episode of Upcoming Attractions, we're talking to two of the eight writers of the groundbreaking Australian feature film Here Out West. Be sure to check it out when it's in cinemas this February 3rd. G'day, gang, and welcome back to Upcoming Attractions. Today is a bit of an exciting episode. We are speaking with two of the eight writers for Here Out West. I saw it at the Sydney Film Festival last year, and it blew me away. And it comes to cinemas this week on February 3rd, available in cinemas Australia-wide. So let's get right into it. Today, I'm here with Von Patiag. How you doing?
Hi. You got it right.
Yes, thank you. You can see in my eyes, I wasn't sure. And also, we're here with Beena Bhattacharya. Did I get that right?
Yeah, it's pretty good,
man. I'm on my game today. This is rare. Guys, I'm really bad at names. So much, I made a sketch about it once. But anyways, welcome to Upcoming Attractions. Thanks for being here. Guys, I'm really excited today because just for the audience at home who might just, if they just know me from the podcast, I'm a Western Sydney filmmaker. I'm a big champion of Western Sydney films. I run a networking group called Western Sydney Filmmakers Hangout. And I'm speaking today with people who are kind of living my dream right now. These two I have looked up to and admired for years and years on the emerging scene. And they're doing what we all dream of doing. They've got a feature film. It opened Sydney Film Festival. That alone, like just being at Sydney Film Festival is incredibly prestigious, but opening it, oh my God. And now you're going nationwide in cinemas February 3. So guys, first of all, I just want to say congratulations. How does it feel? I know it's a loaded question.
No, it's been a ride. I mean, yeah, look, Matt, it's really lovely to be here. Like, we're friends. You know, me, you, and Von are all really good friends. We all do the bathroom selfie at Made in the West Film Festival. I tell people there's a really exciting, burgeoning artistic community in Western Sydney. I'm really proud to be a part of it. It's been being built brick by brick by people like yourself, Ross and Misty and Jay, who run Made in the West, people like Von, who are sort of veteran filmmakers from the region. So we've kind of had this really exciting grassroots film culture for a few years, and now we're finally kind of getting some recognition with this film that has been spearheaded by Sheila Jayadev and Shakti Sivanathan. It was their brainchild to combine Shakti's kind of background with curating emerging talent and Sheila's background as a film producer, having made Ali's Wedding. And it's just been a massive ride. What I will say is that, you know, we knew that we were the opening night film. We manifested it. We talked very early on in the writer's room. When Sheila first said that we were going to go for a feature film, not some shitty web series, which is what we originally thought we were going to have, when she was actually going to push for a feature film, she says, "We want this to open the Sydney Festival in 2020. And it was a year later and COVID later, and we got the news and we couldn't tell anybody, and we didn't even know if the festival was going to go ahead. We're in the middle of lockdown. I was praying to the COVID gods every day, please, can it be an outdoor event, you know, if there's still a wave? And fortunately, the festival came and we were able to have that really magical experience of being the opening night film. We sold out all three sessions in about 2 days. It was really nuts. And then to actually be here, I bought my own ticket for me, my husband and my son at Event Cinema Liverpool, which is the cinema I go to if something's not showing at Campbelltown.
Humbling, right?
I bought a ticket to my own film, you know, like it's just a bit of a trip.
That's amazing. Von, do you have anything to add to that? I know that was a lot, but...
It's been such an incredible experience. You know, like what I'll say is that I had the honor of like doing the opening night address, like me and Nisreen Amin, one of the other writers, we introduced the film, and to kind of stand up in front of that audience full of, you know, industry heavyweights and kind of just be very proud of the film in a way that felt really, you know, authentic. And it was kind of just us on screen was really life-changing for me. Like, I think when I look back on my career, the idea of Western Sydney, especially, you know, with the circles I'm kind of in terms of like working in TV and film, like sometimes I feel like I can't be myself completely. And honestly, opening night Sydney Film Festival, I felt the most myself as a filmmaker ever. Like, and that's such a big statement, but...
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I've been sort of like, the last few months have been incredible since our Sydney Film Festival release and going into theatrical release now. You know, just being able to like engage with community and engage with local press and you know, just telling everyone I know about the film who lives in Blacktown, and everyone's just so excited. I think it's kind of like the first time I've, yeah, really felt kind of like very grounded in my own skin as a storyteller. So yeah.
I don't mean to get this deep this early in the podcast, but I just have to follow up. You said sometimes in like the little local film circles, you feel like you can't be like yourself sometimes. Like, why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's. I think largely it's because a lot of the stories we tell when it comes to, you know, diverse writers or POC sort of representation, they kind of aren't very localized. You know, like I've had the pleasure of working on a lot of projects as a writer, especially, and it's like the local aspect is so important, I think, to POC storytelling. And sometimes you just can't capture that within the realms of a story. So it is kind of like when I reflect back on, you know, a lot of the recent projects I've worked on, it's like I'm feel like I've had to sort of change myself to be part of bigger teams. Mm. Whereas with Here Out West, I've always felt like I could be myself in the room, on production, and even in release. It's always just like, wow, this is like, you know, I look at the writing cohort, I'm just like, wow, this is so us. Like, this is just us as we are. And I feel like I haven't had to change to be part of this project. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Hearing you say that reminds me of a story you once told me. And if we can cut this out if you want to, but without saying any names, I remember many years ago when we first met, you were telling me about just a project you worked on that had a lot of whitewashing, let's say. And you told me a story, I believe, where you were approached to be an extra for that particular reason. Do you remember the story? I don't want you to repeat it if you don't want to. But I will say it's amazing to hear kind of full circle that you've kind of the opposite situation now, where you are able to tell such a diverse story. So in a way, that's beautiful. It shows how much we've come and made progress in the last, I'd say, 5 years or so.
Yeah, I think the best thing about Here Out West is that it is so local, you know, like it feels very, it feels like we aren't trying to penetrate the film industry. Like, we're not declaring war and, you know, going like, we're gonna change everything, like give us everything. It's kind of like we've just built our own city, you know, like we've built our own table and we're sitting at it and we're just like, okay, this is actually kind of cool. Like, we don't have to I think that's the best way to put it. It's like we've kind of just really celebrated the local infrastructure.
Yeah. I think the approach of the way the film is structured is really good in the way it's done, because you do see some backlash here and there with some of Hollywood's attempts, and either maybe in terms of better representation, where sometimes you get some backlash because they say it's too forced, and sometimes it's justified, and sometimes it's like, okay, you're just being racist or sexist or whatever. But like, this film is very authentic. Like, you can't tell this film in a different, like if you were to change the cast or the nationalities, the whole story would change. And I think this is a great time, probably to do something we should have done a bit earlier, is to anyone who isn't aware of Here Out West, just to explain the concept, because this will be probably a big thing we talk about. So this film is 8 different stories interconnected together, showcasing 9 different languages within Western Sydney. Is that accurate? Have I covered that right? Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Cool. I'll just read the IMDb synopsis here real quick. It's a baby is kidnapped from hospital by a desperate grandmother. Her flight sets off a chain of events that bring together complete strangers over the course of one dramatic day. But that, like I said, that's just the glue that puts everything together. So as 2 of the 8 writers, you both have your own different stories. Would you mind, and they all got different titles, so I was just wondering if we can just go around the circle and then just give me a little, you know, what's the name of your story and what's it about? Let's start with Bina, because you've been quiet for a while, which is unlike you. tell us about your parts of the film, your chapter.
I'd love to. My chapter is called The Eternal Dance, and it is about a mixed race woman in her 40s, a sort of Gen X, cynical, faded punk, who comes to her father at his deathbed, and he makes a confession in his native tongue, which is Bengali, which she doesn't speak. And it's about how she, you know, she has to solve the mystery of what her father's trying to say, but also it leads to her having a bit of a reckoning about, you know, why she shunned her father's language and culture when she was young. And that's my chapter. It stars the wonderful Leah Vandenberg and also Akka Das, who is by pure chance a native Bengali speaker and an actor who also acts in the film and also one of the writers. So his chapter connects with mine.
Love that. And Vaughn?
Now I regret going really deep so early. I had this answer and I was like, wow, we haven't even introduced this film.
That's okay. It's organic, baby. It's how it works.
My chapter is called The Long Shift, and it follows a very long day in one Filipino nurse's life. It's kind of an interesting chapter because throughout the film, you see this Filipino nurse interconnect with other stories. And it kind of just gives, you know, a face to a healthcare worker who's going through a tough time. Revealing things about what she's hiding, what she's going through, her family situation, but also kind of celebrating, you know, the small community that Filipino nurses kind of form in secret, you know, when they all kind of band together because they are such a large part of the healthcare workforce. So, yeah.
Yeah, and watching a story, I know this probably wasn't your intention, but watching a story about just a rough shift in a hospital through the lens of COVID, it weirdly, I think, makes it even more relevant. It was already relevant, but it just really puts your mind in another perspective. That actress as well, I'm not sure of her name, but she was...
Oh, Christine Milo.
Christine Milo. She was amazing. I felt like...
She's amazing. She's a star, yeah.
There's a certain charisma to her. I can't put my finger on it, but just every time she was on screen, it just really lit up. Oh man, Bina, yours in particular, I really relate to because I'm Maltese. My nunnal were never learnt English, and I remember being there on his deathbed and wishing I could talk to him. I kind of wish that there was someone going past in the hallway. I could go, hey, get in here and translate. Like my parents were there, but you know, it's wow, we're getting really deep this episode. Let's talk about
happy. Can I say, Maddie, that's a Western Sydney thing. That's it's actually a really big part of our culture. It's why we often feel like we don't fit in when we go to like nice places, because I feel like wearing our heart on our sleeve is a big part of who we are. Telling people your life story within 5 seconds of meeting them. Can I tell you, there was a man who worked on this film and he was actually from Western Sydney. And I could tell because within about 5 seconds, he told me about how his missus was pregnant and he wasn't real happy about it. And I'm like, you're from Western Sydney. I can tell. So that's fine that we're going deep. You keep apologizing, but it's like,
wow.
Emmy.
Wow. Oh, this is great.
I will actually back that because like I work with a sound recordist named Luke Stacey quite often, who is, you know, based in the city now. He works for ABC, I think, but I've worked with him on a few projects. I remember the first time we worked together, it was on Window, which was a very personal film to me, and you know, very professional crew, and we were filming in Minchinbury, like where I live, and just on the sports oval, and he came up to me during in the middle of one take and was like, are you from Blacktown? Like, are you from Mount Druitt? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I get it. I really, I get this story now. Okay. And it turns out he grew up in St. Mary's and he knew exactly what I was saying. And he just like that, you know, we later spoke about how that film actually was his experience growing up here as well. You know, it's a kind of like a queer awakening story in Western Sydney. And I was like, wow, yeah, Bina, you're so right. Like we really do wear our stories on our sleeve because like we are full of them.
Yeah. I just feel like we're real and like, you know, people from Western Sydney connect and like, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but I do feel like, yeah, we do connect and we do often kind of declare our life stories. That's why we're kind of misunderstood as being like super impolite. You know, you'll go to a nice workplace with all these like nice girls and, you know, they have private school accents and, you know, they have law degrees and shit. And like, you know, they're really super fucking polite and they won't tell you all the crap that's going on in their lives. And we're like, man, bitch, this new diet sucks. Rah, rah. Like, we're just very, yeah. You know, like we're just really different in that way. So yeah.
It reminds me of I don't know if you guys are on TikTok or anything, but very recently there was that Yisra girl who was like from Bankstown. She was she had a quote which is saying double O brother, Yisra brother, and people like would make fun of the way she was talking. No, that's Bankstown. Like that is the most authentic Bankstown thing I've seen. That's incredible. Von, you also mentioned Blacktown, which I grew up in and only recently moved out of Blacktown. I'm in the inner west. I'm still Western Sydney. But during COVID, I wasn't around much because obviously the lockdown. Went back to Blacktown recently and I knew it was expanding, but oh my God, I barely recognize it anymore. There's so many new like towers and all these apartments going up. And like, I'm just driving around, going to my girlfriend, like, you don't understand, like, this is where the junkies would hang out. And this is where, there was a lot more culture before as well. And now it's just looking like the city and a little part of me died a little bit inside of me, but it's like, I know the real Blacktown. That's
a big theme of the film as well. Like this idea that you can never go home again and that things change and, yeah. You know, and the way we're sort of sentimentally attached to where we grow up. I think all of that's dealt with. Just with what you were saying before, Maddie, I just want to pick up. It's really interesting how life imitates art. So this film was conceived pre-COVID, but the fact that you have a healthcare worker, a frontline worker in such a critical role, and the fact that people from Western Sydney face so much stigma and were really targeted and singled out for the crime of having important jobs that they needed to turn up to every day. And our film happens to, by complete coincidence, deal with a healthcare worker and a construction worker and people in kind of essential jobs. So it's really interesting. We didn't conceive that. The word COVID didn't exist, if you can believe it or not, when this film was born, when the script was written. But it's really funny how all the issues that we saw as being really relevant to Western Sydney were really just came into the national spotlight with the way the pandemic was handled here.
Yeah, even with like our Sydney Film Festival opening night slot, like I hope people don't mind me saying this, but like we knew very early on that we'd got that slot probably like the beginning of the year almost. And it was interesting because the biggest Western Sydney lockdown that happened, you know, in Fairfield when the whole area was declared a hotspot, kind of really politically ignited everything here. And it kind of changed, it actually did change the conversation around our slot as an opening night film. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people were like, wow, this is like a film that celebrates Western Sydney. And it kind of made our appearance like even stronger. Like we were actually part of that conversation and able to use that as well. So that, yeah, it's totally art imitating life in that way.
That's amazing. But like speaking of the film, I want to go back to like the origins of this project, because what I'm really fascinated about and what I really want to talk about is a bit about the creative process, because this is a very unique film with a very unique creative process. And even the advertising for this film, the publication of it as well, is also unique. There's so many unique elements just on a creative standpoint that I'd love to dive in. Bina, you mentioned earlier about Sheila and I forgot his name.
Shakti.
Yeah. So that they were the origin of this project, but this was originally conceived through a program of Code Curious, I believe. Could one of you explain Shakti, to me how it started? Yeah.
Shakti is the head of a Western Sydney arts organization. It was called, he used to be head of Curious Works, which is now Code Curious is sort of spun off from that. Mm-hmm. And their mandate is to nurture artists from Western Sydney and cultivate, you know, new authentic storytelling from the region. That's what they do. Sheila was probably, you know, in every single film conference I've been to, I don't think I can think of a single other woman of color who's like produced a major feature film in this country, like Ali's Wedding. So, you know, obviously she's a very groundbreaking person as well. And they obviously came together and thought that they would combine Sheila's ability to get a film off the ground and Shakti's a kind of community arts background. And the idea originally was just to bring 8 writers together from Western Sydney for a screen project. That's all it was. And the idea was that we'd each have discrete chapters and that they would work together and that you'd be able to make either watch it as a one-off sitting or you'd be able to watch discrete chapters.
So was this intended originally as like a web series then?
We think that it was intended for a web series. You know, they went for their development money and it was literally like, let's get some money to bring people into the room and have a writer's room and, you know, brainstorm some ideas. And then I think they just saw the strength of the writers. You know, this is just a, like the best thing. Really, it was all sealed by the choice of writers, because there's four of us. There's eight of us. There's four women. There's four men. We're all really, really different. And I think that's when they realized, wow, this actually has the potential to be a feature film. Because yeah, we were really cynical. We're like, this is going to be a shit web series that nobody watches, because that's all brown people generally get in this country. We don't get to do the big play with the big table. We don't get to do the actual proper filmmaking. That's all left to, you know, white folks from Bondi. But they did it. They pushed for a feature film, and the writing from the very beginning has been what makes the film unique. They're like, we're going to be a model that empowers the writers. So, they're going to have a seat at the table. They're going to see this production through from beginning to end as associate producers and have input into things like casting and design and all these other kind of production elements that normally when you write a script, it gets taken away from you. But clearly when you have a writer of color in a very white film industry, they recognize that that could actually be very harmful. So we were involved from beginning to end, and that's it.
That's amazing. So how did you two in particular get involved? Was like a post that went out? Were you guys headhunted? Do you know?
It was a call out seeking multicultural writers from Western Sydney. They were looking for writers, actors, and directors from Western Sydney. And Von and I answered the call. Von was the only person I knew from the writers' room before we were all there from Men in the West. Interestingly enough,
Is that Annette Mateus?
Yeah. I met everybody else that day. I met Matthias. I brought Matthias to Made in the West. I popped his Made in the West cherry. I brought him to Made in the West. Like, he just was blown away. He just had most of us feel very lonely and no idea that there was an entire community of Western Sydney filmmakers. And then he won with Campesinos a year later. Like, I mean,
That was such an incredible project. No one listening to this knows what we're talking about, but that guy's really talented for sure.
Ridiculously talented.
It's a documentary, it's a Vimeo staff pick. Campesinos, it's incredible. Matthias,
like, yeah, and Matthias Bola, I think it's pronounced that. He was also he was telling me about how he was a assistant editor on The Dry,
yes,
that Man in the West Film Festival. I was just grilling him about that because I love that movie as well. But yeah, just moving on. So, you guys have your own individual stories that came up in this writer's room, and you've got to find a way to interconnect them. So I'm wondering, were you guys approached? Cause it kind of feels like a TV show. You got the showrunner, you got the writers, very unique model. Like the only thing I can think of that's outside TV is like the Marvel movies, where they have someone at the top, they got all these other films underneath. But so was the concept of a kidnapped baby, were you given that and then you had to find a way to incorporate it into your story? Was it like a writer's room where you all sort of pitched ideas? Were there other concepts? Like, how'd that go?
I've said this like a lot, but like the stories that we pitched on day one, we all pitched like things that we wanted to write. That was the question that Blake Ashford first asked us, who was our script producer. Like, what story do you want to write? And the eight stories that we each pitched ended up on screen. Like that, the fact that, like, you can imagine how much of a rigorous process that is to sort of protect the core kernels of what we wanted to say, you know, through every stage of production development. So, like, when we first were writing, you know, quote-unquote episodes, because it was, you know, like a web series kind of thing, we were given, the only thing we were given was, like, 10 to 15 minutes, a time parameter. But then, like, you know, Nisreen, I remember, she went first on the first date, and she just said, I have a Polish grandma woman who steals a baby. That was her first idea, and it's amazing to think that, you know, that kind of set off this whole chain, because that it did it's
wow
for all of us, you know.
That's wow. not entirely correct, Vaughn. I remember a bit differently.
Called out.
No. We probably should mention Blake as well, Matt, because you talked about how this felt a bit like a TV and it felt like a TV model. And that's absolutely correct. So Blake Ashford, we have to give credit to. Blake Ashford is a veteran TV writer who was brought in to help weave all the stories together and also just to improve our writing as kind of like a sort of senior writer. And he was just really wonderful and collaborative. Like, he knew that these were our stories and that he didn't have the authority to tell our stories, but he could find some clever ways that we could connect them all together. Nisreen always wanted to tell a story about a grandma and a little girl, because that was her experience coming to Australia. But the grandma
kidnapping,
that was another idea that got thrown up. Just
wow.
And then she made, and then she was clever and made Nancy the character she wanted to write about, the grandmother. But right. It came from her experience of coming to Australia and not speaking much English and being very reliant on her neighbors for babysitting, which is a very Western Sydney thing.
So for example, with your story, Bina, your story is a particularly good example because you feature a character that was featured in an earlier one. Like yours has like that interconnectivity. How'd that work? Did you just write a story and then someone was like, oh, well, my character could fit in that? Or how did that happen?
I met Arka in the writer's room and I could not believe that there was a Bengali actor. Like, I remember just growing up and feeling like I was the only person from my cultural background with an interest in making films. Like I went to a school that was about 90% non-English speaking background, and there were maybe about 70 Desi South Asian girls in my year. And they all at that point were like, no, I want to go and study commerce. They probably did have aspirations to study film, but like that was, I get that they're, I had a different situation because I came from a mixed race family. And also my father was an academic. So I think the pressure was off a little bit. He was like, happy enough. But, I remember feeling so isolated growing up. And then in the room, there's this Bengali actor, and Arka speaks really good Bengali, and he's an actor, and he was writing a piece about three young men. And one of them was kind of, kind of directionless, aimless, ambivalent about his culture. And I wanted to write a story from the very beginning about, the kind of bad ethnic daughter who returns to solve the mystery of her father's dying words. That was what I wanted to write because that was my life at the time. My father had a stroke in 2016, actually end of 2015, and he reverted to his native tongue, which is Bengali, which I don't speak. And it was very, very painful for me. And the fact it was a really long drive. I remember our writer's room was in North Strathfield and I live in Campbelltown, and the traffic was appalling, and it was this really long drive that evening. And I thought, I think that my character has to somehow connect with Arka's character, because I was picturing Arka in the role because I knew he was an actor. I kind of thought, okay, well, I probably play this role. So I sort of thought there has to be this moment between this kind of Gen Xer and this millennial where they kind of he comes to her in her hour of need and he realizes he has this superpower in speaking his parents' language. But that's probably, that's what it came from. I wanted to write the story about the daughter. And then when I met Arka, I saw the potential to connect the stories in those ways. And, it's very, very strong. Von had mentioned he wanted to write about a nurse, and because where we decided the baby was going to be abducted from the hospital, and obviously my part of my story takes place in a hospital, there were all these lovely moments to connect with Von's story with the nurse Roxanne, played brilliantly by Christine Milo.
Yeah. So Von, was your idea to write about a nurse, did that come from hearing about the kidnapped baby, or was that separate? Or
no, I mean, the first conversations were just like, what do you want to write about? We didn't have to chain them together. And I just said, I want to write about a Filipino nurse. Like, I want to write about, just the marathon that my mom does every day to work in a hospital. Like, she used to be an ICU nurse, saw a lot of people die, just because a lot of people in their last legs kind of go to that ward. And she was an emergency nurse for 10 years, and kind of just seeing the toll it takes on just a working nurse to come home and, save some joy and love for her family, but then try and give your job all, give your job everything as well. So I kind of was just really impassioned to be like, okay, like I had done Tom Girl, which was my short film that I did with SBS. And, there's obviously a nurse character there. And I felt like I wanted to explore more of her world, which I never got a chance to do with that short. So it kind of was percolating in my mind when we kind of got into the writer's room. And I just was like, yeah, I want to write about a really hard day in a Filipino nurse's life. And what was really good is that, like, we followed a very, we did follow, I'd say, a very traditional, maybe TV writing model, where we had three clear drafts that we needed to do. And, there were polishes in between them as well. So I think, like, every time we did a draft, the machinations got stronger. So, the first drafts, everything was so disparate. Like, everything was very separate. And then second draft, it was like, okay, maybe we'll do this baby, maybe we'll do the hospital. And then the third draft is all of a sudden like, okay, we're going to do a timeline and we're going to plot everything out and make sure that things are connected. And, use characters from different stories. And I think that third draft especially was really important in the threading, because that's really where a lot of the interconnecting weaving of, you know, the characters was really done.
So are you guys in this writer's room, you, I guess every week or however often it was, are you coming with a new draft? Are you like reading it together, like as a class, and then getting feedback from everybody? Or are you sending them to like a producer, a director, and getting feedback back? Or what's that feedback process like as you're going through the drafts?
It was actually very isolating in the first little while. So we met for sort of intensives. We'd kind of meet, you know, a couple of times a year for a few days and, you know, have a whiteboard and Blake managing the session. So yeah, we pitched our ideas on day one, as Von said, and those ideas really did hold. We found, but in those first bits, it was literally just, we would write our chapter and we would send it to the producers and Blake, and we'd get notes and we'd write another one. And then, you know, we do that kind of thing. I remember when we all came together for the full cast reading, and that was the first time we'd actually heard how everybody's piece fits together. But, and I also remember Von, I remember the day I got the shooting script and I read it from beginning to end, and all those little connections had really been perfected. And I was like, yeah, they've done it. Like they did it. We had, who would have thought that we had eight stories and somehow they all worked together, and the film even more so in the edit and everything. It's actually super cohesive, which is really hard to get right in an anthology film. I remember when my husband first saw this film, he's like, they've done it. Like he's seen New York, I Love You and Parish Your Tame, and they're messy and they're unwieldy and they're uneven. Whereas I feel like ours is really even, and it is an extremely satisfying cinematic watch.
Yeah. Anthologies are tricky. Like even like, I feel like when I'm watching something like Black Mirror or American Horror Story, where there are episodes and they're more separate, you've got to spend this time of getting to know all the characters again. You've got to, there's always that element that like other TV shows don't have that challenge. I think one of the advantages of having as a feature is you sort of meet them, but then like you meet, oh, I remember that person from before. And then the interconnectivity really helps with the flow, I think. Von, are something that really stood out to me, because I've seen you do this in other projects, is you have a cameo in your scene in particular. I noticed a few people too, but what is that like being sort of, you're not directing that, but it is your writing. Like, is that a bit of a bizarre experience?
You know, it's funny. Like not a lot of people know this, but I shot The Unusual Suspects and Here Out West at the same time. They overlapped. So I was producing and writing on Unusual Suspects for SBS, and that was intense. And then, you know, we overlapped quite a lot with Here Out West. Thankfully, the shoot days for my chapters were kind of pushed towards the end of the schedule so I could join. And what's really funny, not many people know this, but Melvin Montalban is a very talented Filipino director who I worked with on Unusual Suspects. His wife is Tanya Lambert, who shot Here Out West. So I like am so entwined with this family, because I just had worked with Melvin for, you know, 4-5 months on end. And then I rock up to this set and I meet Tanya, and she's like, oh my God, I feel like I know you. And I'm like, hey,
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
like, I know you. So like, I know your son, but I've never met you. Like, it's so weird. And then what's so strange is that the first day I was there at night, we shot a bus scene, like the famous bus scene, which was surreal for me, because I had written, I'd written, like, you know, She Catches the Bus, and then to actually see a full, you know, New South Wales regulation bus hired and full of extras, and I just was like, holy moly, like they actually got it. And it was just really funny, because they I don't know, I think because like I'm really good friends with Julie Kalsef, who was directing my piece, and Tanya was lensing it, they just put me behind Christine like in the scene, and now it's like I just, like, honestly, I watch that sequence and I'm like, I'm too much in focus. Like, I'm just like, oh my God. I'm just like, why am I center framed? Like, I don't want to pull focus. But the amount of people who find that cameo and message me, I'm very honored that people give me that shout out.
Okay, Stanley. We get it, Stanley. Oh gosh. So Bina, you sort of touched on this before, but a little bit of there are four directors in this project.
Five.
Yeah. There are five. So there's almost as much directors as there are writers. Was there a particular reason why why they went down that path is just because they wanted to get more voices involved, or do you know, is there a particular reason why, or is just how it worked out?
I don't know the reasoning. I think they just sort of, yeah, thought that the more voices, the better. And, you know, I think they had they were in talks with the directors from the very beginning, but it was all under wraps. So we kind of didn't know until quite late in the process, you know, these are some of the directors we've been talking to. What do you think? So, yeah, I don't know what the thinking around it was.
Yeah, we don't often talk about it, but I think, like openly, but I think the fact that it's an all-female directing team is really integral to, I think, how the film played out, because the five of them are so incredible in their own ways. But I think as a, you know, as having those sorts of leaders on set, they were just naturally so empathetic. And I don't want to say it's like a feminine energy or it's like a, but yeah, it just was like, I think the producers were very conscious that it needed a certain type of like lighter touch and kind of a very empathetic ear, especially when we were working so close with them as writers. And in order to make the feature so coherent, like all the heads of department were the same. So, you know, Tanya Lambert shot the whole thing, same production designer, same editor, kind of everyone works across the chapters. It's just the directors that were kind of handpicked for each segment.
Well, like, it's just a testament to, I think, the whole team and maybe particularly the editing department as well. But like watching it, you wouldn't know. Like I found out much later on and I wouldn't have picked it out. It does flow well. It does have a good cohesion to it. That post-production process, were you guys involved much or even on set in terms of like, I don't know if they're like writing elements or stuff like that, or was it more kind of just like a, I don't know, how involved were you guys to that? Because it sounds like there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
There were a lot of cooks, and it was also disappointing because we were supposed to like sort of get director's attachments, and lots of things that were kind of imagined couldn't happen because of COVID. The cameos were supposed to be a way to make it up to us because we actually didn't get a lot of time on set. So, you know, I remember feeling like really annoyed because I'm like, I don't actually have much clue how a major feature film is made in this country. I wrote this damn thing and I feel like the work experience kid. I think that was just some of the realities of shooting during COVID time. They just kind of had to limit people on set. So yeah, every writer and associate producer appears in the film except me, as you would, as it was Maddie. Yeah, apparently. But I had a great day and I still learned a lot from the day that I was on set, and that was the day, the bus day, and it was Julie Kalsoff's set, and she is a really wonderful person who set the tone for the day. In post-production, as far as I know, people got in touch, writers were called upon for some of the additional dialogue replacement, and some of the translation needed the writer's input. And for me, there was some, I don't want to give too much away, but there was some visual effects that I needed to give input into, but we sort of went away, you know, it was the mess of 2020. We shot a film during COVID. It was a massive, massive chaotic time. So many people, so many cooks. And then we come back to see the rough cut. And gosh, do you remember that, Vaughn? It was such an emotional day. And this is just part of filmmaking. So much of filmmaking is making things and then making peace with when they don't look how they imagine them in your head. So, you know, most of us, five of the eight of us, are really accomplished writer directors as well. I think it might have been six. Most of us are accomplished writer directors in our own right. So we kind of had been picturing this film in our own head for a long time, and we saw it. And the line I say, it's like, if somebody took your mum's recipe for like a family recipe and they went to Borough Markets and they handed it over to a Michelin chef and they made it for you using like all these great ingredients and this like amazing chef, your first reaction when you eat it wouldn't be, this is an improvement. It would be, I want it the way I like it. The way I want it. And so I remember that first screening was really intense, and it was like a grieving process, and we were like not shouting, but we were like, you know, we were really mad. And then like a day later, we came back a week later and we'd sat with it. And I remember I watched it by myself the next day and I was like, this is actually kind of amazing. Like, it's not what I pictured in my head, but it's an amazing film. Yeah. And embracing, you know, that it's its own thing has been a big part of the journey as well.
I always say rough cuts are, regardless of how good they are, they're always depressing. Because because like sometimes there are like, you know, maybe you didn't have time to get that one shot because of time restraints, or the worst thing I feel is like if you're doing comedy and you film it, you edit it, and you realize, oh, the joke doesn't land. That is because you can't cut around a bad joke unless you take the whole thing out. Maybe if it's a horror movie and it's just not scary, it's like, oh, maybe the next scene you'll get them. But when no one laughs at a joke, that is the biggest. But what I always say to people is when I describe post-production process, I don't know if you guys can relate, but it's always like, okay, I put everything in my timeline and then I go, oh no, I'm a failure, I'm an imposter. How do I, and then as you go on, it's like, actually, it's pretty good. Actually, it's amazing. Actually, I'm God. This is the best thing ever. And, but that's why you have feedback, right? So you go through different drafts, you go through different revisions.
Yeah.
Was that a long process?
We were involved. Like, yeah. Like, you know, obviously we drafted everything at the beginning and we did extensive like research before in pre-production that we handed over to directors. A lot of us, like, dependent on the writer-director relationship, because there's 8 different relationships we're talking about, we all had various levels of input or collaboration. I can only speak from my personal experience. I worked with Julie Kalsef, who only directed my chapter, so she only did one. And that was an incredible experience, because I think she just had such a singular, very focused lens on mine, and she was very drawn to my script. She chose that script, and then it was beautiful the way the producers kind of allowed me to vet her as well and have conversations with her and you know, explain my thoughts on translation and Tagalog, and she really incorporated that. So we had a really I guess symbiotic working relationship. And I guess in terms of posts, yeah, we watched every cut. We watched rough cut, fine cuts, were involved in a bit of the soundtrack. I came in for a few days for the edit as well, just to monitor how the Tagalog kind of pieced together. So yeah, I think it kind of was a bit dependent on each chapter and what it required. I know for instance, like Dee, who had 2 competing languages in hers, did a lot of work across the board. So yeah, I think it kind of was varying for all of us.
Yeah, I can only imagine how challenging it must be for the editor who probably doesn't speak all these languages. And then they would probably need someone to be like, actually, that guy fumbled the language there, or he said that word wrong. And then the editor's like, I don't know. Like,
No, you would think, can I just say, imagine. The editor did a beautiful job, like just all credit to the editor, because what an achievement to weave together so many disparate things into something that is such a singular, satisfying thing to watch. But he would have had notes from the day. So he would have had notes from the continuity person saying this take was not like this one flubbed the words or whatever. But yes, people were brought in to give advice because you often have to rewrite lines. I see, as someone who's always worked in a really low budget space, I learned about ADR and that it's this massive cheat. You can improve performances that were shit on the day. Like if people delivered their lines in a crap way, but their face was good, you can just bring them in and re-record the lines and change the angle slightly. And you can also, you know, sometimes the connecting scenes were missing, so they kind of had to cut around it. But if, you know, they brought in some extra dialogue, they could kind of seam the scenes together, but you're just showing somebody else's face. Like there were all kinds of little tricks. And I'm like, oh my God, when you have money, you can like fix bad films. Like I could never be one of these, we'll get it in post people, because I never had any money. So it was like, okay, well, we get it on the day and we get a good performance on the day. And that's what we've got to work with. But there's this magic other land of like properly funded movies where they can bring actors in to re-record lines and they can find really cool workarounds for maybe a scene that doesn't quite land. They can like connect it using a different line or a different take. But yeah, that was phenomenal job by the editor. But yeah, also that's why like Matias was on set for the whole 4 days of his shoot, because he spoke fluent Spanish, you know, and he was there to provide language notes. And Dee's one's really interesting because the Kurdish diaspora, Kurdistan, is really fractured. I understand there's quite a few different dialects, but her partner, who spoke the right dialect for the film, was actually on set to provide language advice. So yeah, it was they took the language side of things very seriously.
Oh my gosh, like you don't think about these things watching the film, but like,
and you shouldn't. So, yes. Yeah, yeah.
that's amazing. Like what goes through to create that. Just quickly moving on. I really would like to talk about a little bit about the success of the film and you know, now it's going out there. So the first I heard, and maybe there was some before this, but you guys were a finalist at Cinefest Oz, up against some other really great films, including Ruby's Choice, which is also made by a Western Sydney filmmaker. Shout outs to Michael Budd. I think, like, pretty sure he's Western Sydney. Either way, he's Sydney. I know he's Sydney. But yeah, and then Sydney Film Festival. Oh my God, you guys. How did you hear the news? How did that, like, playing? Here's the thing, for anyone who isn't from Sydney, to be at Sydney Film Festival, your film at Sydney Film Festival is the goal for everybody.
Yeah.
To open Sydney Film Festival is insane. So just for the 100th time, congratulations. But how do you deal with that information?
It was so funny. Just, you know, you're right. Sydney Film Festival has never liked any of my short films, or, like, I've never liked screen there before. So it was a big deal. It was a big jump for me.
It's a lot of competition.
It's a lot of competition. Yeah. There's a lot of eyes on it. But it was just kind of hilarious because we were talking about it and, like, you know, things had been delayed and was COVID going to happen and La La, was the festival even going to take place? Like, we were all just super anxious. And then they called us for a Zoom and they wanted all of us there. So we all log on, and it was during COVID, and I have, like, my daughter on my lap and everything. And then one of the producers starts recording the session, and I'm like, it's good news, because if it was bad, they're not going to record us all just looking really disappointed. So she started hitting record because she wanted to get the reaction moment when we're like, oh my God, my head, rah, 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 rah. Even though it was all through Zoom, like, we weren't able to have a drink IRL, but it was really funny. Vaughn, do you remember that? I was like, I called it.
You know what? All I remember about those Zooms is that Tien was always at work when we were doing them. So he was always like,
yes,
typing away, and he'd be like, because he couldn't react because he was like on
he was stealth.
He's on the job.
So, but yeah, it was incredible. Like, it was such a big lift in lockdown. The biggest thing that, like, worked, that we were worried about, was because Sydney Film Festival was meant to be before Cinefest, so the fact that Sydney Film Festival delayed, we were like, oh my God, what's gonna happen? Like, we weren't sure if it was gonna go ahead or play, but I think it worked out in the best way. We did have, like, hilarious tech issues on the Cinefest finalists.
Oh my God, it was hilarious. So, you know, paint a picture, it's lockdown. Just really putting it out there, all us writers are actually very good friends, you know? We're all really close. I'm close to all of these people, and we've been through the last few years together, and are a really harmonious, happy group, and we socialize. We've got a group chat that's really funny that, you know, we all add to. So, we're good mates. We nominated for Cinefest Oz. Sucks. We can't go to WA, but we decide we're all going to have a viewing party, and we've all got our WhatsApps open, and we've all got, like, the live stream from Cinefest Oz, and it was so funny. So with a live stream, you often say, like, it's going to be 3 hours or whatever, but of course people start, like, 10 minutes early to do, like, a tech run, and they just hadn't factored this in. So they're there, and the minister's up there, and he's just about to announce who the winner of the Cinefest Oz prize was. So I think you're mistaking us with the Orgies, Matt, because for the Cinefest prize, it was us, Nitram, who won, who we lost to, River, and the Drover's Wife. Those were the four finalists.
Okay, my bad. Although I have seen Drover's Wife, and that film is also amazing.
I thought it was amazing. And Leah Purcell, obviously, who we love, really amazing Indigenous director, directed two of the segments in Here Out West, and also was working on The Drover's Wife. And on a personal note, she's just super lovely. Like, she was very nice to us, I remember. But anyway, so we're there with our live chat, and the minister's there, and he's got the envelope, and he's giving a speech, and seconds before he announces who the winner is, it cuts out.
No!
And we're on the phone to the producers, and we're tweeting at them, and we're like, what's happened? And then we see the other comments from other viewers, this has dropped out. It wasn't like a local thing. All of us lost it. And so, but, you know, we're all there like, well, who won? And then finally Matthias, I think, found, like, and you know, a magazine, IndieWire or something, being like, Nitram has named, you know, it wins the Cinefire Stars prize. So it was super anticlimactic. We're just there and we're drinking and we're, like, you know, getting really excited. And then at the last minute it cut out. So,
oh my gosh,
that was hilarious. But, like, kind of a bonding experience, wouldn't you say, Vaughn?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's such a lockdown experience. And then trade that off for Sydney Film Festival, which was all in person, was like the best feeling. You know, we were like, oh my God, we're finally, we hadn't ever, like, celebrated. It had been a while since we'd celebrated. We saw each other at the Rough Cuts, but we hadn't really been together for months. So Sydney Film Festival was
I know, we were all dressed up. We had the most phenomenal night. It went really quickly. It was like a wedding and then just a bit of tea. We all went to, there was a very kind of unofficial wrap party because we weren't allowed to have a big party because it was Sydney Film Festival, but then we all went to karaoke until 3:30 in the morning. And then I did a Macca's run with, I think, Tien and, oh God, was Matthias there as well?
Matthias was there.
And you were there?
I was there.
Yeah, so we all went and did a Macca's run at about 4 a.m. because, you know, you can take the riders out of Western Sydney. You can't take the Western Sydney out of the riders. So it was all about, like, going to karaoke and getting some fucking Macca's into us in the wee hours of the morning. So
fuck yeah, that's how we do it. That's how we do it. Oh, God, that's amazing. So the last thing to really touch on about this whole journey you guys have been on is, guys, this weekend, actually before this weekend, like a couple of days from now, you're going to be playing in Hoyts, Event Cinemas, Dendy, you name it. What is your mindset right now? Are you excited? Are you nervous? Are you scared? Are you, I can't imagine how you're feeling.
I'm so excited because, like, as a teen, I say this a lot. Like, I drove to Dendy, Newtown. I got my license so I could drive to Dendy to watch films when I was a teenager. Like, I got my license at 15 as early as I could because I just wanted to go to this Dendy indie cinema and watch the most incredible movies. And to, you know, to be opening in that cinema is such a big moment for me. I feel like, I don't want to say validated, but I just feel like, oh my God, this is so full circle in my cinematic history. And then, you know, like Hoyts, Blacktown and Penrith are just my local multiplexes, so it's so cool, like, that I watch Marvel films there and then can kind of see a film that I wrote in the same screen. Like, I'm like, what the hell, this is so fun.
my first experience ever on a set was I was an extra in The Combination, and I saw myself at Blacktown Hoyts, and I said to myself, one day I'd like to have a film that plays here, and you're doing that. So massive, Blacktown Hoyts pretty much raised me. It was in that cinema I discovered I needed glasses. I was watching Beowulf, which was like a CGI film, and I squinted at one point, and the graphics got better, and that's when I realized I needed glasses in that theater. You're gonna play there, so. Congrats. Bina, how are you? How are you taking this?
Vaughn's a Capricorn, so he's really practical. I'm a bit more nervous. I'm a bit more nervous. I think this film deserves a wide audience, and I know that word of mouth is going to be really important already. People have spoken to other people and people are excited about this film, but it's really hard. Will that translate? So, like, just for anyone who's listening to this podcast, we need you to come Thursday the 3rd, Friday the 4th, Saturday the 5th, Sunday the 6th. It has to be those first 4 days, because how the film fares in those first 4 days determines whether other cinemas pick it up. And if other cinemas pick it up, then people, word of mouth will spread more. A lot of people go to the movies in a very opportunistic way. They'd go up to the movies for the day and they see Here Out West and they go, oh yeah, that sounded interesting, let's go see that. They didn't go planning to see it, but it was just there. So the more cinemas we can get to, the more word of mouth can spread, the longer and more successful this film is going to be. But it needs a fighting chance. We don't have, you know, we're not a Marvel movie. We don't have, like, national ads. It's really relying on a grassroots campaign. So you have to go, you know, and I say this, if the film is financially successful, it's going to mean a lot for the region. It's going to mean a lot for this sort of authentic storytelling. So really people have to go. We need a fighting chance. We need to do well in those first 4 days so that then the film can have the life that it deserves to have. But I mean, I have a similar story. Every time I get anxious, I remind myself that we did sell out the Sydney Film Festival in about 2 days. And those were ticketed events. And, you know, we sold out in 2 days. We had three big cinemas and we sold out. And so I feel like, okay, that's a good sign. But secondly, I mean, that was pre-Omicron as well. But secondly, I have a similar story, Vaughn. I remember one of the only films from Western Sydney that I actually like is The Finished People, which was made by a youth worker in Cabramatta in the early noughts, when Cabramatta was a little bit rougher than it is now. I work in Fairfield, so, you know, I know the area well. And the film The Finished People was shot digitally by a youth worker called Quado with some young people from the area. And I remember watching it on the movie show and being like, oh, I better go see that. And I went to Dendy Newtown and I watched The Finished People by myself. And I remember being really moved by it. And I thought, you know, there are little beaners out there. There are little people who are going to see this film profiled and feel like, oh, I really want to go and see that. And we need the enthusiasm and the kind of general goodwill and the zeitgeist for this film to translate to people actually planning to go there. Because if you put it off, if you go, oh yeah, that sounded pretty cool, by the time you go to see it there, it might not be there if people don't show up. So that's what I'm saying to everybody. Go, I'm nervous. I think the film is really good and I don't want it to die quickly. I want it to launch properly. So, you know, everyone should go and support this film for a whole bunch of reasons, but really, honestly, I think you'll enjoy it. Like, can I say every time this film has screened, my DMs, my Instagram is flooded by people, by young people. All of us writers have the same experience. Your piece touched me so much. I loved your film. You know, this was like my experience. We know it's going to touch people. It just needs a chance to get out there.
Yeah. I'm sure this weekend, you know, you might have a late lunch on Sunday and then your inbox is going to blow up. Ah, oh, yep, the 12 p.m. session just finished. Yeah. Now, honestly, guys, congratulations so much. I'd love to ask you about what's next, but I think let's focus on this film for now. Yeah. If you listen to this podcast, do check it out. It does get the... It's the Matt Vella seal of approval. It is amazing. And honestly, I find it personally inspiring. So guys, from the bottom of my heart, not just congratulations, but thank you for inspiring other Western Sydney filmmakers like myself that it's achievable. It's doable. Like we can do this. It's not just fat pizza that gets made out here. Although shout outs to Paulie and all that, but yeah. So congratulations.
Yeah. And the practical Capricorn in me can't resist. So we are playing in more screens in Sydney and Melbourne, but we're also playing in Queensland, in Northern Territory, over in Perth as well, and hopefully South Australia's announced very soon. So if you're interested finding out which screens we're playing at, head to hereatwestfilm.com. All our session times are up on the film website, or follow us on socials, especially on Instagram at Here Out West Film. We've been posting a lot about which screens are sort of showing the film, and hopefully you can find a local session time.
And Maddie, you know, it's really lovely. Thank you for your hospitality and your warmth. But I want to say I have so much admiration for you. Like, you have really nurtured this community as well. You've been an amazing role model. You've looked after people, young people from Western Sydney who are looking for a tribe. So thank you for all your stewardship of this amazing filmmaking community. And we're really proud to be representing it. And we love you. It's lovely to be your friend as well.
Oh, guys, we're gonna have to stop this podcast now because I'm going to cry.
You made me cry once. You saw one of my films and you said, "Bina, you are the real fucking deal," and I burst into tears. And you're like, "Don't cry, you loser." And do you remember that?
I do. I think that was at Made in the West, was it?
Oh, was it? You came to one of my films. You came to one of my screenings, Maddie. And you came and you're like, "Bina, I'm going to tell you this. You are the real deal." And I was like, "Oh," and I started doing what you're doing now. And you're like, "Don't cry, you loser," which is so Western Sydney. And
yeah. Yeah, look, I, you guys have been making all the right moves. For the record, for the audience, these guys they're not a usual writing directing team. I individually love them and their individual works because they're incredible. So shouts to everybody, guys. That's it today for upcoming attractions. Like I said, wrapping this up so I don't cry. But for more of the podcast, be sure to listen to us on iTunes or Spotify or watch us on YouTube. Also, clips uploaded almost daily to TikTok, so be sure to follow us for all the latest cool stuff about upcoming films and more. That's it for today. I'm Matt. That's Bina and Vaughn. Laters.
Laters.